Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Metaphysical Hour. Tonight is March 2nd, 2018. Happy March, everybody. Can you believe it? We're here, March. Almost out of winter. Yay. Starting to see few semblances of spring. I saw a little, what do they call it, Johnny Jonquils? That's what we call them in these parts anyway. I saw them yesterday. It was the first ones came up. So that was the first day of spring, or the first day of March anyway. So I'm like, yay. anyway, so March 2nd, 2018, I'm Julia Cannon, and welcome, welcome, welcome. So glad you're here. Okay, a few announcements that we, things we have coming up. Let's see, we have some classes coming up just next month in April. We have the QHHT companion class, level one companion class, April 9th to 11th. And then as on the same dates, the level three class. And then on the 16th to the 19th, I have level two classes. So, and this is all surrounding the UFO conference that sits right in the middle of those classes. Guess why? and that's April 13th to the 15th. So if anyone wants to do any of those things, they can come to all of that. So that's why we do that. Strategic planning, you betcha. Okay, so the UFO conference, April 13th to 15th, and then all those classes are surrounding it. So if you want to come to any or all of that, there it is. And then we have the transformation conference is in August. It's August 3rd to the 5th. And that is who our guest tonight, he will be one of the speakers at that. So really excited to have him aboard. And our guest speaker tonight is one of our newest authors. Very, very excited. always excited to have this kind of material. It's, where do I go with this? Because it's so near and dear to my heart, to our hearts. We always love this kind of material. Always love when someone can do this and it confirms and validates and corroborates everything that we've always known and received, and it just takes it beyond also what we know, and it's just always so exciting. So anyway, without further ado, I mean, I don't want to you're going, what? our guest tonight, I'll let him go into his history and how he got here and everything, but it's so exciting. This is what I always want to know is how did, in the world did this happen? You know, where did you come from and what brought this about? How does an ordinary person start talking to aliens? You know, this is, I mean, this is so what's wonderful. Our guest tonight is our newest author with Ozark Mountain Publishing. It's Patrick DeHaan. And the book is The Alien Handbook, A Guide to Extraterrestrials. And so it's like everything you would want to know about the extraterrestrials you could ever want to know. And my goodness, Patrick, you have the best questions I could ever imagine. So anyway, welcome aboard, Patrick.
Hi there. I'm glad to be here. Well, first of all, thanks for the compliment about the best questions, but I have to give credit where credit is due. A lot of those questions are prompted to me by my guardian angels and guides.
Oh, okay.
And I've written quite a bit of material unrelated to aliens or extraterrestrials that has also been channeled to me from my guides. And I gave them the nickname The Committee because there are three of them. And three of them. When I get information, go ahead.
You said three of them?
Three of them, yes.
Okay.
And when the information comes in, it comes as a group message. The closest comparison to human communication I could draw would be singing or people speaking together. But most often, people don't say the exact same things together, but they very often sing together. And that's how it comes to me, all three at once together at the same time. They are the ones that give me a lot of these really good questions. And that's where it comes from. How did I get here with aliens? Well, I I've never been all that interested in the subject, frankly. And I know that seems rather strange how somebody could write a book about it, but say they're not that interested in it. I kind of fell into it almost by accident. And I have to give credit there to a lot of the readers of my material, a lot of the people that read my website, who are very interested in the subject. And I have discovered, as I've done that, that there is a huge amount of, as economists would say, pent-up demand or deep interest that many, many people from all walks of life have in the whole idea of extraterrestrial beings in our galaxy that might or have had contact with Earth. So a lot of the subjects they brought up and brought to me, and I thought, well, gee, why not? Because first of all, I discovered that it was frankly very easy for me to communicate with my guides, ask questions, and then get information. And then I started getting questions from people. Could I consider communicating with the souls of the deceased, people that had passed on, including, amongst others, your mother, Julia?
Okay.
Who was and is as famous as you are, and very widely read and very highly thought of. I haven't given that to you. I will at some point, that channeling session. Everybody wants to know. In fact, I did so many of them, I even put them together in a self-published book, not for any big reason, just to make it more available in one place for people that would be interested. So that was the second phase, channeling my guides, being able to channel deceased individuals. I got a lot of this help from the soul of Eric Metis, who is the center of the website Channeling Eric, which is run by his mother, Dr. Elisa Metis. I have to give Eric an enormous amount of credit, because he would very often run off and fetch all of the souls of deceased famous people that readers and listeners, in other words, consumers of my material, wanted to hear from. Adolf Hitler, Dean Martin, Frank Sinatra, you name it, your mother among them. Well, that took me to the third phase, which was, can you communicate with aliens? And I thought, well, why not? Everybody has always said that alien extraterrestrials communicate with each other telepathically, pretty much the same way it happens with the soul of a deceased. So I gave it a shot. And to fast forward through the whole process, you have a book in front of you that's full of that information.
Right.
The aliens themselves. Oh, go ahead. You have a question?
No. Well, This is really interesting, because when I read that, when you're saying how you did it, and I'll let you explain how you did it, but I'm trying to remember what year it was. I think it was 2012, actually, where I saw something that looked like a ship, and I was recording it, and then I came inside, and then I was communicating, I was like putting something out there, and then they were communicating back, and I was like, well, what are you? And they're like, well, we're out here and stuff, and we're watchers. We're just, we're guardians. And I'm like, well, then what? I started talking to them, and they made a comment, and I said, so are you going to still be there when I come out? And they're like, yeah, we're always here. And I'm like, well,
yes.
and they're telling me all about themselves and everything. And then they made this comment, and they said, we are ready to speak to those who are ready to speak to us. We want to speak to those who are ready to speak to us. It's like they want to communicate. That's exactly what you were saying in here.
Oh, yeah. Like, they have their intent up, and they're looking for it all the time.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so anyway, I want you to share how you put it out there and what you did. So,
well, my interest has always gone back to my childhood. I'm one of the baby boomers that remembers Star Trek when it was first on in the late 60s. Mm-hmm. And I have very fond memories of sitting down at the dinner table, and we could see the big console TV in the living room from the dining room if we turned it to the side. And my father was very generous because he liked the show too. And we would all sit down and turn it over, and we would watch Star Trek. Mm-hmm. And I have watched every episode of every series of Star Trek since. Well, anybody that's ever watched it knows that constantly throughout the show, there are encounters with different races and traveled to different planets, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So the idea has always existed in theory. Well, as I got older and a little smarter and a little better educated and studied things like earth science and astronomy, the fact that there would not be an intelligent civilization seemed to be, frankly, absurd. Right. Just look at the sky, look at the number of stars. Anybody that's ever seen the center of our galaxy from like the desert area can see there are so many stars, they don't even look like stars, it looks like a big cloud, hence the nickname we've given it, the Milky Way. Mm-hmm. How in the world, with billions of stars across a disk that is estimated to be 100,000 light years in diameter, could there not be another star with a planet with an intelligent civilization? And to anyone that might say, well, we don't think so because we don't have proof. Okay, we don't have the proof that we would accept as humans, but the fact that there are none are there, just mathematically, it's ridiculous to say that they're not there. Mm-hmm. So I've always been very interested in the subject. Well, fast forward back to the channeling, which started for me, at least the writing part of it started in 2012. I thought, well, let me contact them, see if there are any around. And my guardian angels prompted me to do it. And sure enough, I had no difficulty connecting. And just exactly as you said and experienced, there are many, many representatives of alien extraterrestrials around Earth in orbit, and some from time to time that come into the atmosphere in what I have nicknamed scout ships. They don't bring their larger vessels that they use to come from other planets to orbit Earth. They don't bring them into the atmosphere. They could do it tomorrow. They could do it right now if they wanted. The problem is the closer they come to the surface, the more difficult it becomes for them to cloak their presence. They want to get down into the areas near the surface where they might get involved with air traffic. And if anybody has ever looked, for example, at an online air traffic website or board, you can see that at any given time, there are hundreds of aircraft, large aircraft, flying around over all the countries and all the oceans of the world. So they don't bring the big ships in. They bring in the smaller scout ships. It doesn't matter. They could bring either one in. But they intentionally, voluntarily disclose their presence. They uncloak. This is a big surprise for many people. Oh, they think that the alien extraterrestrial ship that comes into the atmosphere is automatically visible if it just gets close enough. I will say without a doubt, everybody listening to this broadcast and probably everybody alive over the age of 5 that can walk around and look at the sky has looked straight at an alien extraterrestrial vessel and did not know it, because they can cloak themselves completely from visual contact, radar contact, or any other technological means that we have to detect their presence. They can communicate, and they do, using the electromagnetic spectrum of X-rays and gamma rays. We know what they are. We can detect them. They use them as communication mediums, and they can also communicate telepathically, which for many people, oh, there's no such thing as telepathic communication. Well, that's like saying there are no leaves on trees, is the way I see it. Of course it is. They're around all the time. They're everywhere. And they have been paying very close and very special attention to Earth since the late 1930s. When we, as human beings, discovered how to play with matches, which is nuclear energy.
Right.
And of course, what did we do? As soon as we figured out how to rupture an atom and use nuclear energy, we created a large bomb and killed 500,000 people. And while the historical observation of the bombs, the two bombs that were set off in Japan, can certainly be justified. The Japanese were not going to give up. The only way they were going to stop their aggression across the Pacific was a land invasion. And that would have cost who knows how many millions of Japanese lives and easily another 500,000 American forces. From that point of view, ending the war quickly certainly could be justified. None of this means a thing to the alien extraterrestrials. They don't take sides in Earth conflicts. They don't prefer one group of humans over another group. They don't love Democrats more than Republicans. They don't care. None of this registers for them. They are observing us. They are our cousins. They love us. They think very highly of us. They watch us very closely. And they know that we have now discovered how to light matches around huge tanks of fuel. And they watch us very carefully to make sure that we don't do it. Now, on that point, I will note, it is not the alien extraterrestrials that are in control of stopping us from annihilating our civilization. Our own guardian angels and guides are the ones doing that. But the alien extraterrestrials, who, unlike guardian angels and guides, who are spiritual beings, the aliens are physical like us. They have bodies and limbs and everything else. But they are completely aware of the existence of our souls and how we exist, and are in constant communication with their own guides. They have them too, in all of ours. And together they work very much in concert to save us from ourselves. This has been essentially the only, the word would be, I guess, intervention. Interference is a bit of a strong word, but the only intervention into human societies that the aliens have been a part of or attempted to conduct. But they're not really the masters of the disaster. It's not them that are doing it. Other than that, they're around us, they love us, they watch us constantly, and they have been watching over Earth extremely closely for the entirety of the time that human beings have existed on Earth. The reason for that is that alien extraterrestrials created us, and we are their cousins. And I explain this in the book. The whole biblical, the biblical story of Adam and Eve is not just a made-up story. That's real. That happened. It's a bit of an allegory, but it's an accurate portrayal of how the first, the precursors of human beings that we are now were created. So ever since then, until now, we have been closely observed. Earth has always been visited by alien extraterrestrials. And in fact, the beginnings of most plant and animal life on Earth were seeded here when they could be by alien extraterrestrials. By the way, these same things happened with them. We are in a portion of the galaxy, you could probably call it a sector, probably goes out to about 100 or 150 light years around Earth, which is actually a very small area because the galaxy is more than 100,000 across. So we're part of, you could call it a star cluster. This isn't something that we think of normally in terms of astronomy as humans, but the aliens certainly do because they travel across the galaxy, many of them. And there are principally three alien extraterrestrial civilizations. None of them were involved in creating us initially, by the way, but they were involved somewhat in the DNA upgrades that turned the first humanoids into the humans that we are now. After the beginning period. This is in more detail in the book. I imagine, Julia, you've probably read some of the book, so you're aware with these details. Anyone else, you read the book, it lays it out for you. They have been paying very close attention. These are civilizations that come from the stars we call Canopus, the Pleiades Cluster, the Seven Sisters, and Sirius. Sirius is the brightest star in the night sky, and it's about 8-9 light years away. It's very close. It's literally right around the corner. And the civilizations from Sirius that visit us are very advanced, even in galactical terms. They had a very strong hand in observing Earth millions and millions of years, billions of years ago when it was first created. For the large portion of the existence of the planet Earth, life as we now understand it was not possible. The conditions on the surface were not habitable. That took quite a long time. As soon as conditions, temperatures, currents in the oceans, land, et cetera, climate, as soon as the atmosphere and all the conditions stabilized to the point where life could be started at the microbial level, they had a hand in that. And they have very carefully seeded animal and plant life along with many other civilizations on Earth to help it grow and become beautiful. The arrival of humans on Earth was about 100,000 years ago. I think when I wrote the book, I mentioned 50,000, but afterwards my guides corrected me. They said, no, it's more like about 100,000. But that's basically a blink of an eye compared to the time Earth has actually existed. And it's even a tiny, tiny fraction of the time period that animal and plant life has existed on Earth. We are not a natural species to Earth, and we did not evolve from any life on Earth that we see around us. There is a lot of talk in anthropology about the missing link. In other words, the anthropologists analyze the evolution of amphibious beings, sea life, land, et cetera, and they have very accurately put together a chain. The timing is off, but they've put together a chain of species and different animals, for example, simians, chimpanzees, gorillas, et cetera, and how they have evolved. But there's this quote-unquote missing link. They can't find the connection between them and human beings. Well, they're never going to find that connection. It doesn't exist. That's why they'll never find it. We're not evolved from gorillas. We're not evolved from chimpanzees. We're really not involved from anything. We were created, test tube babies is probably the best modern term for it, through very high level sophisticated manipulation of DNA. And that's how humans were created. And aliens had a hand in that and they did it. We've been watched ever since. We're being watched now very closely. At any given time, there are several dozen representative vessels from alien extraterrestrial civilizations in orbit around Earth. And there can be sometimes very few or sometimes very many of their smaller ships in the atmosphere all the time, constantly, day and night, all the time. They're always around. They're always watching us. The three civilizations I named are essentially the custodians. They put into place a prime directive, if you will, to protect Earth from outside incursions or interventions. There are plenty of other spectator alien extraterrestrials that would love to come in and mess around a little bit. These particular civilizations, the Canopians, the Pleiadians, and the Syrians, they see us as part of their coalition, their cousins, their friends, their loved ones. And they absolutely will not allow anything on Earth to occur that is not the result of natural forces or our own human decisions. Total non-interference. They're very benevolent. They're very sophisticated. They're very powerful. But they're not dangerous at all. The funniest aspect of the whole alien extraterrestrial concept I find is the general public image. Oh, we're going to be invaded. They're going to destroy us. This is I find this absolutely hilarious. I almost laugh out loud when I hear this. To destroy us? If they wanted to destroy us, we would be gone in 10 minutes.
Exactly.
It would never happen. One example, and I've said this to my wife, and she makes a face. It's so absurd. I said, how many of us could find our way into a hospital with a maternity ward? And then there are 100 different ways to destroy the place and every baby and every person in there. It sounds so silly to even say it, but that's a valid comparison. Could one of us go into a hospital and kill all the babies in there? Of course. Would we do it?
No.
My goodness, I'd sprout wings and I'd sprout wings and start flying before that would happen. Mm-hmm. It would never happen. That's how the aliens see us. They would never harm us. They protect us and they watch over us. And they are, and I very much think that the writing of this book is one of many steps that are being taken to slowly and gradually make human beings accustomed to the idea. They understand us very, very well. And they understand what a large scale across the board revelation of their presence in terms of sightings, physical presence, etc., would have on the general population. If I had to pick a subject of the book about aliens, and I'm already started on the second one, it wouldn't really be about aliens. The real theme of the book is government cover-up. And again, excuse me, I'm assuming that you've read most of the manuscript, you've read the book. The aliens themselves, jumped into the whole subject of disclosure and explained in quite a bit of detail why they don't come and reveal who they are. And they say very clearly, what do humans expect us to do? There are many humans that would be absolutely up the walls with joy over the idea that aliens have the ability to cure disease and cancer. What would happen to human societies if they could come in and cure every disease? What if they could come in and show us how we could suddenly extend the lifespan of humans to 300 years? What would we do if they could come in and suddenly get us to put down our quote-unquote weapons? It would completely destroy human society, because as soon as we pointed to one group of weapons and said, neutralize those, all the bad people using those weapons would then find new weapons, and then the aliens would have to neutralize those, and on and on and on. And within 20 minutes, I'm exaggerating, obviously, we would suddenly become subjects. They would never do this. They have contacted regularly and constantly, especially since the 1930s up until today, the leadership of human governments, principally the U.S. government and Great Britain. It's not that they prefer Great Britain or the United States. They don't hold one country above or below another, or any group of humans against any other. They love us all equally. The reason they do that is that they know it's generally most effective. If they go and they meet, for example, with the government of Myanmar, that's going to have a generally less beneficial effect on human societies than if they meet with the governments of Great Britain or the United States. So they have. They are sadly and deeply disappointed that they have been received with a great deal of skepticism, and that the governments have completely concealed all of this information and the contacts, because they don't do it for any other reason than to help us and to give us suggestions, but they'll never interfere. There is a great groundswell of frustration amongst the general public, I have since discovered, that governments conceal this information. But here's the problem. Who creates our governments? We do. Mm-hmm. It's totally the result of our own choices, which is exactly what they want us to do, make our own choices and learn just as they have learned. All of the alien civilizations that watch over us have all gone through stages of evolution and development just as we are, and we have. And they understand us very well. They're fascinated, on the other hand, to see the different decisions we make and the things we do, which are unique to Earth. For them, this is like a laboratory like no other, especially now that we are, for the third time in the existence of human beings on Earth, coming to a point of technological sophistication where we have learned to, so far, misuse nuclear energy and travel into outer space. The first two civilizations, Lemuria and Atlantis. And now we're coming close to a level of technological development, scientific understanding, and knowledge that existed on Earth already. This is also another subject that surprises a lot of people. When the right time comes, and I don't know if that right time is going to be 50 years or 100 years from now, at some point, our alien extraterrestrial cousins are going to sit down and explain all of this to us and tell us about our true history and the history of prior civilizations on Earth, of which we have no acknowledged, documented record. They will provide that to us in as much detail as we might be willing to accept. Some of us, probably you and I are in that group, Julia, will accept that gladly, with open arms, very happy to know all those details. Except I can get a lot of those details now. I just ask and they give it to me.
Absolutely.
Probably same thing happens with you. I ask them to identify themselves, and they're very interesting. They say, well, we don't really use names. Give us the name you want us to use. We don't communicate with names. We used to do it a long time ago. We communicate telepathically. Some of us keep and warehouse old names that we had for our planets and our civilizations from many, 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 many eons ago. I hesitate to say centuries, because time on other planets doesn't work like it does on Earth. But they remember some of the names. So in one case, one alien said, well, we call our planet Nemida, so you can call me Nemedian if you'd like. But we don't use that anymore. We don't need to. This is also another very interesting subject, because many humans struggle with this. Well, you know, what name do we give them? Well, we don't need names. They don't need names or identifiers to tell who's who. Just as human babies and mothers don't need names, a newborn baby doesn't need a name, doesn't have a name for its mother. It recognizes, any baby recognizes its mother instantly. How are they able to do that? Well, it's a natural human ability. We teach it out of ourselves. Well, the aliens don't teach it out of each other. They use it all the time. They use it with us. So anyway, I've given you a little bit of a background. to the book and the subject of aliens and how I came to it. I'm not really a ufologist or UFOologist. I'm not all that interested in UFOs. I have seen a couple. I think they're very interesting to look at, but I'm not all that thrilled because I know they're not going to invite me for joyrides across the galaxy. They're probably not going to take me to their planet of origin. They probably can't. Many of the alien civilizations can't come into very close physical proximity to many humans. Some can, some can't. The ones that have taken the lead and met with humans are able to do it. Those are the Pleiadians. They go by a number of different names. I've heard tall gray, tall white. But those aren't really good indicators of civilizations. Those are better descriptors of the physical appearance. There are some very sophisticated alien extraterrestrial civilizations that look very, very little like us. And they much more closely resemble what we would call insects. But they're not insects. They're very capable and very smart and very intelligent and technologically sophisticated to a level we could not even begin to understand. We could only begin to hope to see their technology being used, but we couldn't even begin to understand how they do it. And they look like insects, as we would see others, for example, the Pleiadians, resemble us so closely, we might not even be able to tell the difference if a Pleiadian dressed up like a human and walked down the street. But they are not human and they are not like us. They're very different. And everything in the middle. Many forms of life in other planets are silicon-based versus we're carbon-based. The Sirians are similar to us. The most stereotypical image of aliens, which very interestingly, the artwork on the book, I don't know who did it, but it was fantastic, is probably a pretty good representation of Sirians, where a larger skull, the larger eyes, they're a carbon-based body chemistry like we are, but others are silicon-based. And there are all sorts of different plant life. So a lot of them can't really come to Earth, spend very much time close to us, and they can't really live in our atmosphere for a long period of time. Some can't come at all. They can only come into orbit and see. There are a lot of differences. The ones that are most adaptable to our environment are the ones that have taken the lead and made the contact. And when more broad disclosure occurs, they will be the ones that do it. Anyway, I've given you a bit there. Go on to your next questions.
Yeah, but you have in there also about like their homes and on their planets and things like that. And how they live. Really, really interesting.
That's very superficial. They give me lots more detail than that if I ask for it.
Exactly. Well, you mentioned that the insect type aliens. Where would they might come from if these are more humanoid or from Sirius and Pleiadians? Where would the? Because I just had a something just happened to me recently, and I mean I've heard of the ones that are like. I just went blank.
What I'm getting is that they resemble a praying mantis.
Yes, that's what I'm trying to think of. That was the word I was trying to think of. And that's what I had come in. Anyway, I don't even know what to call it, a vision or whatever.
Well, you say it was a vision. What they're doing is telepathically transmitting to you an image of their appearance.
Yes.
They are, this is what my guides are telling me,
okay.
My guardian angel guides, that the ones that have the insect-like appearance that are very advanced are approximately 10 feet tall. And like a praying mantis, they don't stand all upright, a bit of an angle. Well, most humans would see that and freak out and think they were monsters because they're 10 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
And their eyes glow a different color. It's almost reddish. So if somebody saw a 10-foot-tall praying mantis in the middle of the street with reddish eyes, what would their reaction be?
Yeah, freak them out.
Well, some people would go grab guns. You know, they would react not positively.
Mm-hmm.
Well, those alien extraterrestrials understand that.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Because we look the same way to them. How would most of us react to a rat or a cockroach in your bedroom?
Yeah, we freak out.
That's what we might look like without the understanding. Now they understand us, they come visit, so they're not freaked out by us.
Right.
Any more than we're freaked out at looking at an ant farm in a lab. We're not freaked out about that. But if there were a swarm of fire ants that were coming into our house, we'd react a little differently. There are a lot of differences. Understanding, of course, smooths all this over. They're not afraid of us, but we look just as unusual to a lot of these races. The praying mantis-like or the insect-resembling extraterrestrials are not from my guides are telling me, are not from our immediate star cluster. They come from a bit farther away. They're very sophisticated. They're very friendly, and they have very good relationships with the ones in our immediate area, and they've known about each other for, in Earth terms, millions and millions of years. They do a lot of business together, a lot of commerce. They're very sophisticated, one of the most sophisticated in the galaxy, and they watch Earth with great, great curiosity because a lot of their planets, a lot of the animal life that is similar to humanoids, mammals, marsupials, etc., that we have, are relatively less developed and considered inferior versus the more insect-like races and beings are more advanced. Of course, on Earth, it's very much the opposite. So for them, that's fascinating. Watch the interactions and the life on Earth. And that's why they come. But they're not going to come down to Earth and have regular contact with us to any great degree. They don't want to and they don't need to. We don't have anything to offer them except insight into the choices and development of human society. That fascinates them. But they don't really, if we were to observe, I don't know, a gaggle of geese and observe behavior of geese, how does that really improve human society? Well, it doesn't. It's still very interesting to study and it's very insightful. But that's in for some alien extraterrestrial civilizations, human beings on Earth are pretty much the same. So they're not all that interested in interacting with us, but they come and they look all the time. They come down to Earth. They like to walk around on the surface. They like to see things.
Sure. Explore.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. We like to do it too. It's in our nature.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we have explorers. We are explorers.
And the reason we are explorers is because it's literally in our DNA.
Mm-hmm. We're very curious.
And we're not the only ones in the universe that are that way. Of course, this takes an enormous leap of faith for a lot of people. Oh, there really are aliens around? Yes, there really are around. They're around all the time. They see everything. And they watch over us, everything we do, everything we say, every TV program, everything on the internet, everyone. And they're looking out for the contact because the disclosure is coming. And this is the biggest issue. When is that coming? In fact, this is something I'm going to talk about in more detail in August when I'm at the Transformation Conference. Really, this depends upon human beings. This depends upon our society. We have to make the decision, the collective decision, to not freak out and undo the very benefit of the purpose. They have already made contact with our government leaders, and they're frustrated that really nothing positive has come from it for our benefit. And that's the reason they're doing it. They want to let us know, hey, you know, you're a member of the club, you just don't know it yet. And you're already in the clubhouse. It's our sector here. And this is why. This is who you are. This is how you're created. You need to be a part of this whole process, and you need to understand it. And then we can help you. We're not going to hand you solutions to something you see as a problem. What we are going to do is indicate your choices and what you might do. This is the research that you should do to solve this economic problem, this medical problem, this social problem. This is what you can do here. This is what you can do there. Right now in the news, every once in a while, there's one of these mass killings. It jumps all over the news, at least in certain parts of the world. They will come to us and tell us, no, forget about this whole idea of taking weapons away from people. You can't have modern society with technology and not have weapons. Almost anything you develop is a weapon. A jug of bleach is a weapon. Put that aside. You have to address the behavior reasons that these things occur. This is how you do it. We've had all these things happen in our civilizations also. This isn't unique to you. You can do this. Look around your own animal life.
Yeah.
Look at dangerous animals you consider to be lethal. For example, wolves. Wolves get hungry. They decide they're going to hunt something. They're going to get it. Wolves don't kill each other. Can they? Of course. All sorts of wild animals. They don't go after their own. They don't kill things other than to hunt, to survive. Why do humans have Adolf Hitler? Why do we have Pol Pot and the Khmer Rouge that slaughtered 3 million people in Southeast Asia? Why do we do this? Addressing the implement that the homicidal maniacs choose is not going to stop homicidal maniacs. There's a deeper way, and there's an easier way to address it. And the aliens want to teach us this. This is what you can do. This is how you can solve this problem. This is how you can solve that problem. This is how you can resolve economic challenges and inequality. And you don't have to take anything from anybody. You don't have to make rich people poor. They can stay as rich as they want. You can eliminate these problems. This is how to do it. That's what they want to tell us. They're not going to come down and hand us gadgets and give us ray guns and give us any of the other technologies that they have. They're going to show us what we can do. That's what they want to do. We, unfortunately, through our leaders and representatives, have resisted it. The general population hasn't, but it's very easy to resist because we're not allowed to know about it. The whole Area 51 thing, of course Area 51 exists. They explained to me how that happened. It was alien scout ships that were flying low in the atmosphere, and we were developing radar, as some people might know, and I forget the terms. Radar is an acronym, R-A-D-A-R, and it stands for radio amplitude something detection. And so that's where the word came from. And early on in the development of radio transmission, somebody came up with the idea, hey, we can send out a strong signal and then pick up the reflection back. And then with the Doppler effect, we can detect speed, movement. And of course, everybody takes radar for granted nowadays. And it's much more sophisticated than it used to be. Back then, we over-engineered because we didn't have the technology or the finesse. We would point radar very strongly, and some alien extraterrestrial ships were picked up visually, flew in front of an experimental radar transmission tower, and whoever was operating it didn't know any better and turned on an extremely strong radar burst to try and get a signal. And the alien ships flew through it very briefly and lost navigational control. Well, no problem, just reset the system, except they were too close to the surface and they crashed. So what did we do? Well, we ran over and we found the ship with the bodies and discovered a whole bunch of gadgets inside that ship. Mm-hmm. And those gave us the clues to developing nuclear technology. This has all been covered under 100 million tons of secrecy. Mm-hmm. We're not allowed to know about this, but that's how we found out about how to use nuclear energy. The analogy on Earth would be if a relatively unsophisticated turboprop aircraft with one or two engines, let's say, crashed in the Brazilian jungle, could the natives there that never normally see aircraft up close, could they find the intact or the pieces of a plane like that and figure out how to make the engine run? Yeah, they might. Now, they certainly wouldn't be able to manufacture or design the engine or produce one, but they could figure out how to use it. Well, that's what we did. So we figured out how to use a lot of these technologies. These and many others have been accidentally discovered or given to us. All sorts of things like, for example, Kevlar, which is a very strong carbon fiber, all sorts of technologies that we use, a lot of them have been offered to us in bits and pieces by alien extraterrestrials as a way to help us. There's some conspiracy out there, a little bit, that I've read about it. I know very little about this subject. There are a lot of people that know a whole lot about it, and there's a whole conference on it every year, now going on 31 years, next month in Eureka Springs, and I'm going to be there for the first time to hear a lot of this stuff because I don't know much about the subject. But there's a lot of conspiracy that the aliens come down and offer us certain technologies in return for things that they want. No. They don't need anything from us. Things that they want from, if they wanted something from Earth, they would just take it. We would be absolutely powerless to stop them. And it isn't because they have weaponry that would hurt us. They could simply neutralize us. They have mental capabilities that are beyond anything we can imagine. They could simply freeze us in place and paralyze us physically and do whatever they wanted if we attempted to interfere. They would never do that.
They constantly know what we're thinking and everything that's going on all the time.
They're listening to this conversation right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they've always
they're all sitting back listening to this, chuckling to themselves. Great, they're talking about us. Mm-hmm. They love it.
It's wonderful. They're PR.
Exactly, they like it.
Mm-hmm. Well, they've always said they know our intents better than we do. So, I mean, all that goes in.
That's the very interesting part, is the telepathic communication. They can read our thoughts, and I explain this in the book. They can read our thoughts, and then they hear our words. They have learned our languages. They're not hard to figure out. We do the same thing. We call it code breaking, but it's the same process. They have figured out our languages, and many times they have met with government representatives. They have a very small voice generation device that they've invented, and they can either hold it in their hand, put it near their mouth, and they can use that to create sounds and words in our language from their thoughts and communicate with us easily so we can understand them. And they know how to do this very easily, but they don't need to hear our voices back. And they don't. They can read our minds telepathically. This is a big step for a lot of people, but humans do this all the time. We just give it different names. We call it intuition. But we do it all the time anyway. Learning telepathic communication is just like learning another language. You pick up a bunch of people in China that have never been outside China, and you take them to Russia, they're going to be confused at first. Can they learn to use Russian? Of course they can. It just takes time. It just takes a little effort. Humans all learn languages as children so automatically and easily. None of us even remember it, but we all did it. I speak several languages, and I learned the second language as an adult, so I have a memory of the process. But it's the same process everyone uses when they're little children to learn to speak. Learning how to communicate telepathically is no different. Every human being can do it to a greater or lesser extent. Everyone can learn how to be a telepath. It's natural. It's a part of how our brain works, except we train it out of ourselves and we socially discount it, but it's always there. Some of us, you're one, your mother certainly was one, I've discovered I'm one, I have more of a natural ability, and I've also developed it quite a bit, and it has amazed me how the ability has improved with my efforts. And as it got really good, I started channeling and posting things to my website, and it's been downhill since there.
Yeah, and like you said, and the thing is, and what I found, like you said, it's a matter of working it and practicing it. And what I found, it all starts with a question. And that was a surprise to me, because I kept thinking, well, I don't do this. It doesn't work. And mom started it. She's the one that got it started with me. She was like, well, ask them this. I'm like, that's not how it works. And when she did it, an answer appeared. And I'm like, well, maybe that is how it works. And I'm like, well, there you go. So
exactly.
That's how it works. You just ask a question.
I get this all the time. My guides explained to me several years ago, when the question is asked, what that does is authorizes the release of the information.
Yeah.
The information is there. We're willing to give it to you, but we're not going to intercede. We're not going to intervene. Mm-hmm. Tell us what you want to know. Even right. Before the question is finished, they've read the question in your mind and they got the answer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it comes to me. So when you say I have good questions in the book, it's because the my guardian angel guides are prompting me with a lot of these questions. I have to give them credit. They're all here now listening to this, and now they're all bowing very humbly, and they're saying, thank you, thank you, thank you.
Oh, I just know I would never have thought of those questions. So that's why I was just like, oh, these are wonderful.
Oh, there's even more. This is just scratching the surface. In fact, as I was putting together the chapters of the book and the different sessions that I've done, I thought, well, I have to keep this to a reasonable length because there's a lot in here.
Mm-hmm.
And reading a whodunit novel where the pages fly by, you can have 200 pages, but that's not really all that long versus 200 pages of a biological biochemistry textbook. It can be extremely long because it's very densely packed with information. So I had to keep it to a reasonable level so that the book would be something people want to read.
Exactly. And this,
I hope I struck a good balance.
Absolutely, you did. I mean, this is, it's easy to read, and just exactly what you say. You want to get through it. You just keep going, keep going, keep going. It's like, what next? What next? I mean, this is fascinating.
It gets even more detailed. For example, when I started in the different things about their technologies, what are their technologies for transportation, communication? Where do they live? How do they build their homes? I could go on, and they would give me information as I were looking at blueprints. I could get all sorts of information.
I know. It's like, my gosh, you've got exactly here. I'm like, we could build it. It's like, it's wonderful.
Yes. That's one of the things that they would like to show us. For example, one of the things and I saw this in a Star Trek movie, and I remember way back when I saw it, it pushed a button in my mind that has always been pushed, transparent aluminum. One of the things they want to show us how to do is how to create aluminum, but make it transparent. So it's as strong as aluminum or other or alloys, but it's either opaque or completely transparent like glass. And how think of the advantages of something like that. Unbreakable windows. Mm-hmm. Think of the applications for something like that. They want to give us hints and indications of how we could build certain materials when we're ready for it that won't distort human society, that won't change the course of humanity to favor one group over the other. That's the whole problem. One group favoring another group. Mm-hmm. If they come down and they say, oh, here's the cure for cancer, and it's pretty easy. It's essentially this herb, this herb, this herb, this herb. Fast forward, if a person drinks this medicine 5 times a day for 3 months, the cancer is gone. How much does the medicine cost? Well, let's see, in current terms, about $5 a day. There are a lot of businesses that are making a lot of money from cancer treatment. And I don't mean to criticize them. They're attempting to cure cancer. But what happens to their business model? Well, we humans have shown pretty quickly that when our business and our money are threatened, we react to that as if somebody is pointing deadly weapons at us.
Exactly.
We treat our money, well, shoot, look at how we guard a bank and look at how we guard a school. And that kind of says everything we need to hear about human society. So when aliens suggest certain technologies, they understand the economic implications. Economics is just a study of human behavior. It isn't really about money. Money is just the means with which we express behavior. So when they offer certain technology, they're very, very careful about how we would use that and distort and harm ourselves. They don't want any group to take something that they offer up and use it to gain advantage and harm another group. They absolutely don't want it. Now, if we do that ourselves, that's our choice. But they don't want to be a party to that. So they're very reluctant. So fast forward to the comment I made earlier about disclosure. Disclosure is going to come when we collectively demonstrate that we are not going to freak out. When we understand they're not coming to colonize Earth, they're not going to build huge bases, they're not going to tunnel into the ground and live under the surface, because they don't. Oh, there's these beings that live under the surface. No, there aren't. Spiritual beings that are in and around Earth all the time. Yes, that's everywhere. But they're not physical like us. There are not going to be any physical beings. The aliens would never permit that. They would never allow that. They're not going to do that. They're not going to build bases. They're going to be our friends. They might have a diplomatic mission. We can go see them there. They can come visit us. But they're not going to run things for us ever. Just like we're not going to go to their planet and run things.
Exactly.
At some point, they might invite some of us to go visit their planet. I would be really interested in that documentary. I know I'm not going to be in that group. Frankly, if they came to me and said, well, we'll take you anyway if you'd like to see it, I would probably turn them down. And the reason I would turn them down is, what would be the purpose? I'm not going to come back to Earth and tell anybody that I've been there. Can you imagine the reaction?
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, Don just flashed to me. We're coming up on the 1 minute mark.
Absolutely. So before we run out of time, I would like you to let everybody know if they want to get in contact with you, how they can, you know.
Oh, very easy. Okay. Go to my website, www.theamendment.net, theamendent. Very simple word, theamendment.net. And there's a contact page there.
Fantastic.
You can find a link to the book. Of course, if you're interested in the book, just go to Ozark Mountain Publishing, OZARKMT, or for anybody that speaks the British version of English, OZARKMT.com.
Right.
And you can find it right there.
Yes, it just came out. I think we got about a week ago. It's very recently, just hot off the press, and so exciting.
Yes, an interesting subject. Oh, and by the way, I will be at the UFO conference.
Oh, that's so exciting. I didn't know. That's wonderful.
I'm there to learn like everybody else because I don't know much about this, but I know Ozark is going to have a table with the book, so I'll sign it for anybody that wants that.
Yeah, that'd be wonderful. Yeah, so everybody come and see Patrick. And then come again in August and see him again, see him speak.
Well, what I expect is going to happen, which I'll be happy to do, away from the formal schedule. If somebody wants me to channel an extraterrestrial, I'll give a swing.
That'd be wonderful.
They'd love to do it. They love it. They're chomping at the bit to do this.
Exactly.
But very few people are willing to try. When I say people, mediums that are very good, and there are spectacular mediums out there, light years ahead of me in their channeling ability, that could do it, but for whatever reason are not interested or don't try. I gave it a try and it worked. The alien extraterrestrials, all of them, would love to do it with anybody that will listen. I happen to be one, so they're doing it.
Exactly. Well, and I, like I said, I tapped in very easily. So, but I just haven't done, and I've done it a couple of times, but just very briefly. And I thought, the way you're talking about it, it's like, I can do that. I've done it before, so I'll just put more effort to it.
Well, they will overload you like a truck that's collapsed its springs if you ask for it.
I welcome it. I would love it. I love it. I noticed the time, and on that, we will have to leave. So thank you so much, Patrick.
Happy to do it. I'll be happy to do it again.
This has been wonderful. Oh, I would love to have you back. This we could carry on with anything else you are getting. And maybe we could have you bring an alien in. Would that be our extraterrestrial? I'd rather call them that. Maybe we could do that.
I'd be happy to do it.
Oh, that'd be wonderful. That'd be so good. Okay. Well, thank you, everyone, for being with us. And maybe we will just do that. Would you like that? Let me know, and we will bring Patrick back. And so good night, everyone.
Okay, good night. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Julia.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.